If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Amateur Traveler, episode 889. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about pitons and pastries, paragliding, a shield volcano, sea turtles, and samosas as we go to the island of Reunion in the Indian Ocean. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Reunion. I'd like to welcome to the show Colin McFadden from whyshouldivisit.com, who's come to talk to us about Reunion Island. Colin, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
I feel like I should be welcoming Colin back to the show, but he's never been on the show. But Colin is a patron of the show, and so I have seen his face on Zoom dozens of times and feels like an old friend at this point. Colin, where is Reunion Island? What are we talking about here?
That's definitely the first question you're going to get when you tell people you're going to Reunion Island, because especially in the US, basically no one's heard of it. Easiest way to find it, if you're thinking about a map of the world, is to find Madagascar and then go about 600 kilometers to the east in the Indian Ocean. If you happen to know where Mauritius is, it's just southwest of Mauritius as well.
And what is your connection with Reunion Island?
Like a lot of people, I have a notes document I keep of places I want to go. And I just, when I hear about a place, I add something into the notes document. And I had added Reunion Island to the list a long time ago. And at the time, I was not good about keeping track of how I learned about places. So it took me a while to actually figure out why it was on the list. And we live in Minnesota, and we're always trying to think about how we get out of Minnesota in the winter. And so when we were thinking about a winter trip this year, I'd been looking at a bunch of destinations and started looking at Reunion. I actually eventually figured out that I'd found out about Reunion first from a show on Amazon Prime called The Grand Tour, where they'd gone briefly to Reunion Island, and I'd said, that looks cool. And so I'd added that to the list. But that's my connection. I'm not French. I don't speak French, and I don't have any connection to the French, but Reunion is part of France. And that's basically the only way any Americans would know about it, is if they've taken French classes and it maybe got covered there.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Reunion Island?
So Reunion is, I would say, first off, like an adventure destination. It is absolutely not a place to go for beaches and just hanging out, mostly because they don't have beaches per se. There are a few, but it is a volcano, very much like the Hawaiian Islands. And it is a place to go for hiking, biking, climbing, canyoning, paragliding, you name it, you will find folks doing it on Reunion Island. I would say also it is a really interesting cultural mix in that it is France. Like, it's not a colony of France. It is a district of France. And was uninhabited prior to the French showing up, and then reflects 18th, 19th, 20th century French history and French trading patterns. And so it's a real mix of sort of French vibes, East African vibes, South Asian vibes. And so there's some interesting cultural stuff as well.
Excellent. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Yeah, so I would say everyone's going to put together an itinerary that reflects their particular adventure interests. We ended up being there for 2 weeks. We were intending to be there for a week. And I would say that's a good amount of time to go and really see and explore the island. It's very sort of navigable. There's good roads you can get around pretty easily. And I would say if you were thinking about a longer trip, you might do a like half Reunion, half Mauritius sort of thing. But in terms of Reunion, I would say it's the kind of place that I think you can very much get by picking a home base. So find a really cool Airbnb or a hotel that's really exciting to you, make that your base, and then figure out an itinerary from there, because everywhere in the island is reachable within an hour and a half, max 2 hour drive. And so now, I'm going to put
coming
together
from the Twin Cities. Did you base yourself in St. Paul just for familiarity?
There was definitely some selfies taken going from St. Paul to St. Paul. And I should say, as we get into this, as I say, I don't speak French. And so I'm going to try not to mangle names, but just I'll do my best to say you're going to be doing adventure travel. And I would say you should figure out first off if there are any things that you have your heart set on, okay, and plan on putting those early in your itinerary, because weather in that part of the world can be somewhat changeable, somewhat dramatic. And so if you're going to Reunion Island and what you absolutely want, you like have your absolute heart set on an early morning sunrise helicopter ride over the volcano, which is a thing people really want to do, plan that for your first day. So if there are storms that morning, you can reschedule. Same goes for paragliding, which is another really popular activity on Reunion Island. Book that for early in your trip, but just plan that you might need to adjust a little bit to make sure, okay, that you can fit that activity in. There is only one real international airport that you're going to be flying into, which is in Saint-Denis or Saint-Denis, if you're French. And you're almost certainly going to be getting there from Paris. So from the US, you'll fly to Paris. And then there's a number of airlines that fly Paris to Reunion, which, as a little bit of trivia, is the longest domestic flight in the world. So you're still in the European Union. You're still in France. You take a domestic flight. And Saint-Denis is, I think, in its own right, a really interesting city. I think for folks in the US who've spent time in New Orleans, you'll get to Saint-Denis and you'll think, this is familiar, because of course it was built in a similar time by the French and has very similar sorts of architecture. And I don't know, for us was very familiar in that way. So certainly a good place to explore, especially if you're landing in the morning and maybe can't get into your hotel until later in the day. Spending a little time in the city, it's definitely interesting. I would say for most people, you're not going to put together an itinerary that is very city focused. If that's interesting to you, it's worth doing on arrival or on your day out.
And if you had a city itinerary, are there things that you would recommend in the city?
You can do a walking tour that will take you around the art and architecture of the city. There's a tourist information office there that has lots of maps and guides, self-directed guides to the graffiti of the town or the history, the architectural history of the town, those sorts of things. And you can easily do a walking tour around the entire core of Saint-Denis within an hour and a half or 2 hours. But I think that is a good way to just get your sense of placing the location within a time frame, a time period. You're not necessarily going to have to rent a car, but if you're comfortable driving outside your home country, I would probably recommend it. Car rentals are easily available at the airport. They're pretty affordable, maybe 150 euros for a week-long rental. And you're just going to benefit from the flexibility there. But if you're someone who's just really not comfortable driving, there's an amazing mass transit system. So you can literally take buses all around the island, and you can even take buses up into the mountains to trailheads. And so if that's something that is a little more comfortable for you, I think you can definitely get by. You just might be a little more constrained on when you're starting hikes and when you're ending hikes and those sorts of things.
Okay.
So I think, as I say, I'm a big fan of picking a home base in somewhere like this. In our case, we were down on the south side of the island. So Saint-Denis is in the north. We were staying down closer to Saint-Pierre in the south. And we really picked that just because we found an Airbnb we fell in love with. And so I think that's a fun way to explore the island, because as I say, I don't really think it matters exactly where you are. So if you're more interested in a resort experience or a very high service level hotel, you're probably going to be over on the western coast. That's where most of those are. If you want to be really remote and have private coastline just to yourself, you're probably going to be over on the east side of the island. And you can just look around and see what fits for you.
Geographically, I was seeing that it's a relatively round island with your usual ring road going around the outside and only one road that cuts across the middle from one side to the other, and that ends up at Saint-Pierre. So did that have influence your decision for there, or is just a really cool Airbnb?
Honestly, it was really just the Airbnb. When we booked the Airbnb, I was a little worried that accommodations might be tough to come by just going in the winter. I didn't know what the tourism levels would be like. And so when we started thinking about Reunion, the first thing I did was look at accommodations, and we saw this one and just fell in love and booked it. But the roads are, I would say, the ring road and that the NR3 that cuts across the country are really, it's the European Union. So they're very well built, maintained. Traffic can be tough though, because you only have a handful of roads to get around the island.
Right.
There's also some fun road construction trivia or novelty in that the road out of Saint-Denis moving counterclockwise around the island is built actually over the ocean. So they had an old coastal road that was so prone to being closed by landslides that they just moved the highway out into the ocean. And so they're driving just suspended above the ocean for a good 15, 20 kilometers.
Okay.
And I would say in terms of the driving, just to help people understand what to expect, those ring roads, really standard highway, nothing novel there. When you're getting up into the mountains, though, you should be a little more prepared for very twisty, turny switchbacks, single lane bridges, single lane tunnels. Think Amalfi Coast or Dolomites or something. And so if you're someone who is prone to getting car sick or maybe not super comfortable with steep drop offs, just be a little ready for that. I would say it might be the most aggressive mountain driving I've ever experienced in terms of just the numbers of twists and turns.
Okay.
I would say after you've landed in Saint-Denis on your first day, you've done a little exploration and you've gotten to your accommodation, wherever those might be, on your next day, on your first full day there, I would probably prioritize doing a helicopter ride if that's something that's interesting to you.
Okay.
I think that both because it's a really neat way to get a sense of the location, and as I said, just because of potential weather changes, if you're comfortable with it, it's maybe worth the splurge to do that. And those are generally going to take off pretty early in the morning because people want to see the sunrise, but also because weather tends to move in by noon, mid-afternoon. And so they want to get the helicopter rides out of the way before clouds come in. And what you're going to see on those helicopter rides is that Reunion is, it's a volcano. It's actually a bunch of volcanoes. Mm-hmm. And you'll be going over one or more of the very large craters that formed the island and are continuing to form it today. Reunion is still an active volcano. It has had eruptions as recently as last summer in 2023 and a more substantial eruption in 2022. But these are Hawaii-style eruptions where...
That was going to be my question.
You know, yeah. Yeah, you can get a vantage point and watch the lava, but there's no explosions and you don't have to worry about being at any risk.
Okay.
There's also, for the geologists out there, I happen to be married to a geologist, so I get a lot of geology when we travel. The hotspot that is creating Reunion Island is the same one that made Mauritius, but also the same one that made the Seychelles and the Maldives and the Deakin Traps in India. So the continental plates have been sliding north. The hotspot's always stayed where it is. And you can see a history of erosion if you look at, think about the Maldives being incredibly low-lying, barely above the ocean. They were at one time big dramatic islands. They've just been weathered away, and Reunion hasn't yet had that happen.
Which means it is a big dramatic island. I'm seeing jagged peaks, and there's a reason why there are those switchback roads here.
Yeah, and when you get to the coastline, most of the coast is...
Oh, right.
Coast, beaches. Yeah. And then a 10-meter drop-off, and then ocean. Say, in addition to doing a helicopter ride, there are a lot of hikes in the lowlands around the coast that are worth doing. I think a lot of the online activities that you'll find will focus on mountain excursions, even multi-day hikes in the mountains or in the volcano center of the island. But there's actually both for interesting geology and interesting environments, as well as if you're interested in wildlife, birds, and interesting plants and things, a lot of that's going to be out towards the coastline. And I would say starting out with a helicopter ride to get your bearings of the island, but then just starting to pick some hikes. I'll mention a few hikes as we're talking here today, but there are hundreds of marked trails on the island, probably way more than that. And we mostly just opened all trails and scrolled through the list until we saw things that looked cool and then did them.
And were the correct level of difficulty for your fitness level. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll also just put a plug in here for the Reunion Island Tourism Board, which has a website at reunion.fr. I don't think I've ever been anywhere that has as comprehensive a tourism guide, and it's all available in English. And they've collected together hotels, all different guide services, other activities you might do. They've got hundreds of trails on their website that they've described and uploaded maps for. And they're also super responsive. I reached out with a question at one point and got a response back right away. And so that's a really amazing resource, because you're not going to find a lot of other material in English about Reunion Island. So I really did rely on that website while we were planning our trip.
Okay.
One of the hikes we did early in the trip was in a river valley called Bras de la Plaine that is taking you through a series of arches in the basaltic arches and caves, and where you're actually hiking in a river. And that was a really nice introduction to the landscape and the scenery without having to get into doing a really aggressive mountain hike. That's one that's accessible just by driving out of town a little ways and parking your car and then going for a hike. And I felt like it was really helpful as we were getting adjusted to the climate. It's pretty warm, pretty humid, and the sort of time change, starting our trip out with hikes that weren't going to leave us completely exhausted at the end of the day.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by BetterHelp. As someone who has two active podcasts, two active blogs, and a full-time job, there are times that I want another hour in my day to do things. Then the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy can be helpful to learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, and it can empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/traveler today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/traveler. And thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code TRAVELER to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code TRAVELER. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
And you're south of the equator, so you were there in Minnesota winter, therefore Reunion summer.
That's correct. We were there right at the beginning of what they consider the rainy season, which is generally January through maybe March, April.
So you're still more equatorial kind of seasons with the long wet, the short wet, or?
Yeah, they have, things get pretty dry in our summer months. I don't think the temperature changes too dramatically. It's going to be always in the low 80s with some rain on many days, but it is, yeah, pretty consistent climate, I think. I would say as you're going into the groove of your trip, if you're interested in doing any other activities like paragliding, that's a good day two, day three activity. Paragliding is definitely one of the most popular and accessible, more adrenaline-y activities folks do there. So if you're not already aggressive rock climber or something,
did you do paragliding on your trip?
We did do paragliding. This was first time paragliding and Kat's first time paragliding as well. And it was wonderful. I honestly wasn't sure what to expect. And it was just a really pleasant time. And it's a very popular activity there. It's almost all based out of a town called Saint-Lô. And there are dozens of operators because basically you just need a parachute and a car to be a paragliding company. And we got in touch with an operator and you show up and you drive up to the top of a hill, maybe 800 meters above the sea, and you get strapped in and then you just run and then you're floating. And it was a really fun experience. And
you're doing this, I'm guessing, tandem?
Correct, tandem.
So someone who knows what they're doing is actually steering you.
Yep. Yeah. Your only job is to run when they tell you to run and stop running when they tell you to stop running.
And can you have your camera with you, or how does that work?
It was one of the very few things we did on Reunion Island where there was a clear tourist relationship, I would say, in that they are going to film you with their camera and then very much want to sell you those photographs when you land.
Sure.
And that seems to be pretty consistent for all of the operators.
And I'm sure they don't really want you holding onto your camera and then not holding onto your camera and dealing with that hassle.
Yeah. And I imagine because you do fly over some houses, and I imagine that's the other.
So you're going up into the pitons, up into the hills that were the jagged cliffs, or the one of those, or
it wasn't that far up, so it was just starting to get into that more dramatic landscape. But you can imagine the coastline has more gentle hills up until you get into the real steep mountains. So yeah, I think we were about 800 meters above sea level when we took off.
And having not done this before, how long was your flight?
So our flight was about 20 minutes and could have been quite a bit longer, but there was a storm coming. And so we got to the top and they looked at the weather and said, oh, we have to go right now. So there was very little explanation of what was about to happen. And we had to cut our trip a little short. And the way it works is essentially you book you book a paragliding appointment. You can tell them roughly how long you want to be out for and they'll charge you accordingly, but they don't actually bill you till you've landed because they can't control when they necessarily have thermals that they're able to fly on, those sorts of things. But I think the longest that most of the companies offer can be upwards of 45 minutes or an hour if you've got good thermals and you can
By the minute or something is why they don't charge
you. No, it's more like a couple different tiers of 30 euros for 15 minutes and something like that.
Got it. So if you have to cut it short, you don't pay quite as much.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And they do for the folks who are a little more adventurous or maybe have already done a basic paragliding experience. There is some other paragliding on the interior of the island where you're jumping off of, or I don't know if jumping is the right verb, but you're departing off of a steeper cliffside within the mountains and you're then floating over more of the volcanic landscape instead of floating over the ocean.
Interesting. Okay. So you're going down towards the populated area from the mountain.
Exactly. So you land on a little section of beachy area, which is where pretty much all of the tour operators are based out of.
Huh. Interesting. You would do it again, it sounds like.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed the experience. And my wife, I think, found a new sport for herself and has now been looking at where else we can do this. Living in Minnesota, which is very flat, the way you do it here is apparently being towed behind a pickup truck, which is maybe a little less romantic, but it is definitely the kind of thing that on future trips, we'll definitely be keeping our eye out for paragliding.
Interesting. Okay.
One of the real surprises for us, because we weren't doing a lot of museums and things like that on this trip, but one of the real surprises for us was actually right next to where the paragliding happens at a place called Colonia, that's with a K, and that is a sea turtle sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And I had never been up close to sea turtles, apparently, because I saw them and I was like, wow, this is bigger than I expected and much more fun than I expected. And it's essentially a rehab facility for sea turtles that are caught up in fishing lines or otherwise injured, and an education facility, a research facility. And so they have a whole series of different tanks and areas for sea turtles who are in different stages of their recovery. And you can go and learn. They've got a lot of great exhibits, and also just watch the sea turtles that are currently in rehab as they're swimming around. And I think it was far more interesting than I expected. And I could have spent a lot more time there just hanging out and watching sea turtles.
Yeah. If once you have swum with sea turtles, it's a pretty amazing experience.
I'd love to do that someday. They also
You're watching them in pools.
Exactly.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
Yep. And so it's a facility that was in the 70s, I think, built as a sea turtle farm and has now been turned into a sanctuary for sea turtles.
Huh.
And I would say also that I think one of the things for us on this trip, going to a place like Colonia, in some parts of the world, I would have some reservations about that sort of thing, that maybe this is just being done to exploit these animals for tourists. The fact that you're inside the European Union and being governed by EU policies did give me a little more confidence that there's a system in place that's making sure this is actually being done for the right reasons.
The odd thing that you're in Africa and also France at the same time.
Yep. And I should note, I didn't say this explicitly, but you are paying in euros as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The other thing that is in the same area as paragliding in Colonia, that you could easily do this all in a single day around Saint-Lô, is there is a really fantastic botanic gardens. And the flora and fauna of Réunion Island is early in its life, because this is a new island. There hasn't actually been, in the grand scheme of time, a lot of time for new things to evolve on the island or for plants and animals to naturally make their way there from Madagascar or East Africa, for example. But the botanic garden is a really nice way to get an understanding of what is natural and native to the island and what's been brought in by different rounds of settlers and now more tourists and things like that. And it's set in an old geranium plantation, because at one point Réunion Island was a center for geranium growing, which is used in perfumes.
Okay. Interesting.
The botanic garden also has a really fantastic cafe or restaurant, which is available for late breakfast, lunch, early dinner, middle of the day meals. And they are serving a mix of what is called Réunion Creole food. And I don't know that you would necessarily go to Réunion as a food destination, but it is a really interesting mix of East African and Madagascar food traditions with French food traditions and French preparation methods. And now in the last 150 years, influences from South Asia. And so you're going to have meals that in a single meal are going to give you a long simmered pork dish with beans and rice and maybe a samosa. And that's an interesting intersection of the cultural history of Réunion Island.
Okay.
I think that after you've done your helicopter tour, maybe your paragliding, you've gotten some things out of the way in terms of scheduling, you're really ready to dive into some more of the adventure activities. And for me,
jumping off the mountain was not an adventure activity.
Maybe more the activities that are going to make you drenched with sweat and regretting your decision to have such an aggressive vacation. So for me, that was mostly about hiking and climbing or mountaineering or some mix of those things. But certainly people go to Réunion specifically for cycling as well. It's a very popular activity. And there's both on-road and mountain biking cycling opportunities as well.
Okay.
I would say that as you're really getting into that, the meat of your trip, a good day would be planned around a small town in the mountains called Bourg-Marat. Sorry, French people, B-O-U-R-G. And that is home to the Volcano Museum. And as I say, I think understanding Reunion Island, you really need to understand a little bit of the history of how it's being formed, both how it came to exist as it is today and how it continues to grow. And the Volcano Museum does a really nice job of explaining both the local geology and the bigger history of this entire hotspot and ridge within the ocean. And that also gets you up into the mountains so that you can start doing some more aggressive hiking. And the other thing that I would say is a real highlight for a lot of people going to Reunion Island is waterfalls. And you are going to have waterfalls everywhere you look. And there are all kinds of lists online of the top 10, top 20 waterfalls. I would say every waterfall we saw was very nice. And I didn't feel like we needed to go out of our way to find the best waterfall. But near the Volcano Museum is a particular one called the Grand Basin Waterfall, which is, again, one of these places that you get there and you think, I'm not entirely sure this is real because this looks so much like the pictures you see of fictional tropical places with these dramatic cascades of water. And it's really just a treat to be there in person.
Very cool.
The hikes up around the Volcano Museum, and again, you can look at all trails and pick one that's in accordance with your fitness level. We did one near the Volcano Museum that was about a 12-mile loop that took us through a series of smaller hills or volcanoes or pitons. And it was within that 12 miles, four or five different ecosystems and completely different landscapes. And I think that was the first taste we got of just how varied the island can be, because it is a relatively small place. But as you're moving around, both because of just weathering and different rain shadows and things, you can move maybe an hour of hiking and suddenly be in a completely different ecosystem, going from scraggly, spooky oaks covered in moss to exposed red mud to a mountain lake, all within just a handful of miles. That does bring me on to talking a little bit maybe about prepping for this type of hiking, though, because it can be pretty intense hiking. Mm-hmm. There are some pretty good vertical climbs. I think we did multiple days with 3,500 or 4,000 feet of elevation.
Okay.
And one of the real things we were thankful for was having hiking poles, because you're dealing with pretty steep surfaces and things that can get very slippery if a quick rain shower moves through, because you've got a lot of mud that just turns into ice, basically. And so we actually rented hiking poles from a small outfitter in Saint-Denis. But if you own your own pair, I would definitely encourage bringing them along.
And did you tend to do them earlier in the day just for heat and weather reasons, or were you doing it all through the day?
A trip to Reunion Island is not a trip for sleeping in. Okay. So I would say the earliest we started a hike was one that left at 3 a.m. And that meant that we got up at around 1:30 in the morning to drive up into the mountains.
Oh my.
And even on our slower, more relaxed days, many of our hikes were starting around 7 or 8 a.m. because some people really want to be up at the peak for a sunrise or something. That wasn't necessarily our motivation, but it is a lot more enjoyable to be walking before the clouds move in and cut off all of the view. If you are interested in doing some more maybe adventure-y hikes, the types of things where you're going to be using some ropes and harnesses for more mountaineering style things, there are a lot of guides, or there are a handful of guides, I should say, on the island who can take you in a group up to some of the more dramatic outcrops and vistas. So we did one day like that. That was the hike that started at 3 a.m. And if that is the kind of thing you're into, I would say well worth doing.
Okay.
Hey. My name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Is there a particular operator that you had good experience with that you would recommend?
The operator we worked with was called Adventure Reunion. It's just a single person named Olivier. And we did 2 days with him, one on a group hike where we were going up to a particular geologic feature called the Three Salzes, which are three rock pillars. And so that was a hike that met at 3 a.m. There were about 10 of us. It was meet up, start hiking, climb nonstop for about 2 hours so that you're up at the ridgeline for sunrise. And then we had a little bit more of a relaxed time moving along some ridgelines and then some sort of light rock climbing up to these three pillars. And we were coming back down by noon, 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And the other day we did with him was more traditional rock climbing, which is something we're into in general. And he helped us with gear and everything, so we didn't have to bring all of that ourselves. And that is an activity that if you've been to maybe a climbing gym and you're interested in trying some outdoor climbing, I would say the rock and the environment in Reunion Island is very friendly for a first time out climbing in nature. It's very accessible and there are a lot of beginner friendly rock climbing routes. So obviously do it with a guide so that you're safe, but you don't have to be a super aggressive climber to enjoy climbing in Reunion Island.
Okay.
After you've gotten your orientation to the geologic history of the island at the Volcano Museum and maybe done some hiking, the other hike that is a must do for many people coming to Reunion Island is an area called Piton de la Fournaise. And this is the area around the crater from the most recent major eruption. And this is where the island is still growing.
Okay.
And if you're up for doing a more all-day type of hike, I would say this is probably one of the ones that really should be on your to-do list. And it's another one you're going to want to start early because it's in a part of the island that does tend to get cloudy by around noon. And it's one of these hikes that's going to have you feeling like you're walking on Mars, where
right.
because it's had a recent eruption, there is nothing there and it's very desolate. And then you can get a sense of where this island has come from.
Got it. And I'm not seeing that there's an option that I can take a bus to the top here and just walk down.
That is correct. This one, because of some of the eruptions, as you get close to it, the roads are a little bit less
sure.
built just because they've been destroyed. And so you're driving on some gravel and it's a little less accessible.
Got it. And we're in the southeast corner of the island at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would say if you are interested in that sort of volcano adventure, at Piton La Fournaise, you're up at the top where the lava is erupting out of, but you can also go down towards the coastline and do a hike along some of those lava fields or on top of some of those lava fields. And that is also a really fun experience because you really are up close and personal with the rock as it's, or the lava as it's entered the ocean. And so you're able to see the beginning of the weathering that will in another few millions of years create beaches.
Interesting. Having watched hot lava hit cold, relatively cold water in Hawaii before, sometimes that beach creation process is much quicker than I realized. It's more explosive in nature than weathering, which it had not occurred to me, but...
Yeah, this was definitely one of those times where traveling with a geologist, sometimes you just say, I'm going to leave you here. I'm going to go do some exploring because I know I'm not going to be able to drag you away from obsessing over the little bits of olivine that are present in the rock, those sorts of things.
Got it.
For our trip, we basically filled all of our days with more hiking. I understand that for some people, they want their vacation to have some things that feel a little bit more vacation-y. So I would mention that there are lots of spas and more relaxation focused activities on the island. And if you wanted to do a spa or wellness day, there's no shortage of those opportunities. And even though it's not a beach island, if you really are someone who just enjoys chilling on sand, there are a handful of stretches of beach that are available. There are public beaches in San Lu and some of the other towns that you can go and hang out on. It's probably worth noting because there's only a handful of facts that anyone might know about Reunion Island if you're not French. But one of the things you might have heard about is that it is the place in the world with the most fatal shark attacks. And that is one of the other reasons that it is not necessarily a big beach destination.
Okay.
So there are some beaches that have shark patrol, shark watching, or other types of netting or things that are designed to keep sharks out of the water. But I would say in general, you want to do a little bit of research there and maybe not just jump into a beach that you happen to find on a hike or something.
Huh. Okay. Do they have any reason that they think that there are more attacks here than someplace else?
I've read a few different things about why there might be so many shark attacks here. And of course, like, so many is still not that many. It's handful of fatal shark attacks, but it's a mix of where it sits in the ocean. It is surrounded by very deep waters, and then you get a pretty dramatic uplift, obviously from the volcano. And then you also have a lot of surfers there because of the coastline and because of the waves. It is a popular surfing destination, and surfers look delicious, I think. And so that, well,
unfortunately,
the other,
sometimes look like more shark food, like sea lions or something. Yeah.
So I think it's some combination of both the position it sits within the Indian Ocean and then just the types of activities people tend to be doing within the water. But I know it does scare people off, because if you go doing your research, you'll find a lot of people talking about the shark attacks. And in general, it's probably kept them from pushing a lot of swimming development within the ocean. Many or even most of the resorts or even bigger hotels will have private pools and may not have a developed swimming option in the ocean at all.
Got it.
The other activity that I think for a lot of people might be a new experience, but is definitely worth fitting into one of your last days in Reunion Island, would be canyoning, which I think is kind of a catch-all term in some ways for doing stuff that's going to involve getting in some water and maybe floating and bashing around a little bit. But in Reunion Island also often includes zip lines, rappelling.
So more organized in that sense. Developed,
yeah, exactly.
I guess, would be the right term.
So you can find a lot of different options for canyoning tours that will probably put you in a wetsuit, give you a helmet, give you a harness, and then you'll be doing a mix of those both roped activities and just floating activities as you make your way down through a series of river valleys and over waterfalls and things. But that's, from what I've heard talking to guides, probably the most popular activity for tourists in terms of an organized adventure activity on the island.
Interesting.
And certainly something that I think varies quite a bit around the world. What canyoning means exactly varies quite a bit.
Think of it as a hike up a river sort of thing, but
sure. No, this is definitely a float down a river. Some places it can be a much more, I would say, aggressive activity where you're huddling yourself up and going down a water slide of rock, essentially. In Reunion Island, it's a little less dramatic in general, I think.
Oh, interesting.
The other types of activities that are really popular are kayaking and getting out on the water in ways that don't necessarily expose you quite so much to the sharks. And for people who are more into getting a little further out into the ocean, there are a lot of boat excursions that'll take you out for sunset or take you out for fishing expeditions, those sorts of things. I think one of the things I really fell in love with on Reunion Island was just that sense of when you look to the south, the next piece of land is Antarctica. And when you look to the east, the next piece of land is Australia. Like, you're really out there.
Right.
And so I think getting out in the ocean is a pretty cool experience as well.
Excellent. Anything else you have in your itinerary for Reunion? Things we ought to do while we're there?
Oh, yeah. Haven't really talked a lot about the cultural side of Reunion Island, but because we, on our trip, didn't get to experience one particular aspect of that, which is that there is a group of people called the Mafate. And these are descendants of slaves who escaped from the French sugarcane plantations.
Okay.
And they would escape from the plantations and head up into the mountains. And they developed communities that continue to exist today and in some cases are still unreachable by car. They're supplied on foot or by helicopter.
Huh.
And you can do tours that will take you on a hike into one of these communities for an overnight stay with the Mafate. And I think that's one of the things that if we were to go back again, I'd really like to do. It wasn't the kind of thing that could fit into our schedule on this trip, but I think that getting that sense of more of that unique culture that has developed over the last 250 years would be super interesting. And so there's a few different options for doing that sort of thing. If you're not up for doing the overnight stay, some of the communities are a little more accessible and have some small museums that you can go to as well.
Interesting.
The other stuff I'd mention, just as you're thinking about your trip, it is definitely not a bargain destination. So you're paying in euros, and a lot of the things you're buying have had to be brought in by ship or by plane. But the things that are produced locally are very affordable. So that's going to be a lot of fruits and vegetables, probably some of the best fruit I've had anywhere in the world because of just the growing conditions. And it is still France. And so things like cheese just are inexplicably affordable and delicious. And so we did a lot of just get up, go to the bakery, get a beautiful croissant and a baguette for the day, get an amazing 3 euro wheel of brie, and then make that your picnic meal. And so that sort of little bits of European or French influence that show up in the society, I think, are part of what makes it really fun. And after your hike, again, you can stop back at the bakery and get some beautiful, delicate patisserie and have a delightful treat as you watch the ocean.
Or a samosa. So it's
exactly
a range
yeah.
there. Okay.
Yeah. And there's within each of the towns, there's different street food vendors as well. So if that's more of your thing, you can try the different Indian, or even there's some Chinese influence as well. So different types of street food carts and trucks as well are available in all the towns. And you'll see roadside fruit stalls and vegetable stalls and things.
Very cool. As we go to wind this down, anything else that people need to know before they book their flight to Reunion Island?
One thing I would say in terms of booking your flight that I felt a little silly that I didn't discover is that there are a couple low-cost airlines that fly there from Paris that don't show up in the online travel search engines Google yeah. Flights. So we got there on Air France, obviously, but there's a low-cost airline called French Bee that yeah. has flights that are really affordable. And honestly, if you're flying out of New York, you can do one of those bookings connecting in Paris, and it doesn't have to be an especially expensive flight.
Interesting. I knew about that airline, but I did not know they flew to Reunion.
Yeah. And they're just not going to show up unless you go search their website directly.
Yeah. No, some of the low-cost carriers just choose not to give a cut to the OTAs, the online travel agencies.
Yeah. We landed and saw the French Bee plane out of the window. And I said, wait, what's that? And I went looking and I was like, oh, this could have been a $600 flight. I feel a little silly now.
Interesting.
So. Yeah. I would also say for Americans traveling to Reunion Island, you're almost certainly going to have at least a full day layover in Paris just because of the flight schedules. And you could very easily bake in an extended stopover in Paris as part of that trip. And the same goes for when you get there. There are lots of low-cost flights from Reunion to Mauritius, the Seychelles, Mayotte Island, into Madagascar, et cetera. And so if you wanted to put together a bigger trip, you could book your round trip to Reunion and then just book some low-cost hops between the islands.
Got it. Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot in Reunion. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I really just fell in love with the dramatic coastline, and I think the dramatic coastline at sunset. Yeah, I was tempted to say on a mountain peak at sunrise. That sort
sure,
of things, but, yeah,
that's what I expected.
Yeah, we had this Airbnb that was right on the coast. And for someone living in the middle of the country without any ocean, being able to just each evening... The waves are pretty intense, and the sound and the sights, and just that idea that there's nothing between me and Antarctica really was powerful for me.
Excellent. And one thing makes you laugh and say only in Reunion.
Being incredibly sweaty, having done a couple thousand feet of elevation in the mud, under the sun, and then being passed by a trail runner. And these are not tourists, like people in Reunion Island are incredibly active and somehow just have infinite energy. And this happened to us multiple times on hikes where we would think we were like pretty hardcore out there working. And then a trail runner with maybe a tiny little backpack, but maybe not even that, would just come flying past us. And it just made us laugh every time.
Excellent. And if you had to sum up Reunion in just three words, what three words would you choose?
Adventure, dramatic, and active.
Our guest again has been Colin McFadden, and his website is whyshouldivisit.com. Colin, I know you don't necessarily consider yourself a travel blogger, but if we wanted to send people to your website, to your best post on Reunion, do we have one?
I have a post called Why Should I Visit Reunion Island, which will break down why you might want to think about slotting this into your travel plans.
Excellent. Colin, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Reunion.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Colin and the other patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I got some feedback from Rachel who said, "Hope you are doing well. I feel compelled to get in touch to let you know how much I enjoyed your January episode on Tokyo with the nerd tourists. I stumbled across your podcast last year, and it has been such a helpful resource in planning my 5.5-week trip to Japan and South Korea, which I'm on right now. However, as a nerd that dabbles in many disciplines, I find some nerdy interests are considered less legitimate than others. For example, there's a lot of information in Western guidebooks if you're a history buff, but not for anime and manga fans, even though they are a huge phenomenon in Japan. It was really refreshing and helpful to hear from Matt, and I appreciate you putting yourself outside your comfort zone as someone who is less familiar with that side of nerd culture, although the not Mario Karts are definitely a toe in. I also wanted to pass on a few restaurant recommendations to those traveling Japan who are vegetarian / vegan or just aiming to avoid seafood. And I'll take the whole email, which includes the restaurant recommendations, and I'll put that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com if you're interested in that, rather than try and read off all the different restaurants. But thanks so much, Rachel. I appreciate your comments. And yes, I was outside my comfort zone. And I honestly was torn about that episode because it was so different from what we normally do. But that's one of the reasons that I aired it, is I thought that it might fill in some gaps that we hadn't talked about before. So I'm glad you appreciated it. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.